Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I want to thank Rabbi Schwartz for conceiving of and organizing these series of parenting lectures. It's a great schus to be a part of it, to follow Rabbi Palgan, who blazed the trail. And tonight we're going to be speaking about balancing love and authority in parenting. And let's get right to it. I want to start with a havamina, a hypothesis. Our goal in raising children is to be mechanich them, to be Torah observant Jews, following laws and commandments. There is so much training that is necessary. Authority seems to be absolutely indispensable in our responsibilities. Without limits, without rules, children would be wild and less likely to grow up to become rule-following, mitzvah-observing people. So it would seem that the basis of parenting is establishing authority, exercising authority, and love is the icing on the cake. Let's share a story. No less than the great Rav and Manhig of Michal Twersky of Milwaukee was once asked, probably by a mechutzef, how was it that he was able, growing up in the 40s and 50s in Milwaukee, attending public school, to remain frum? His answer was, I knew my father loved me. Let's think about love and versus authority in the following scenarios. You have a young child who you discover in your bathroom sitting next to an open bottle of pills with many pills scattered around the floor. This is a true emergency. You rush the child to the emergency room. And the doctor says, we need to pump his stomach. And I need your help. So you're asked to hold the child down as they insert the tube. It's very painful, great discomfort. And you see your child looking at you with eyes that are saying, how can you do this to me? This is so painful. This is so terrifying. And you, my own father, you're the one doing this to me? Now, you're not going to stop, obviously. Is that love or is that authority? Think about that one. Next scenario. Your 8-year-old son comes to you. He wants a hoverboard. Everybody's got a hoverboard. All his friends have a hoverboard. It's not fair that he doesn't have one. Come on, give me that hoverboard, please. I want a hoverboard. And he keeps pestering and asking constantly. Now you know that you don't want to get him a hoverboard. He's too young. His friends who have one are not very responsible or safe when they are on their hoverboard, and you don't want him to have it. Is saying no to him and being firm about it, is that exercising love or is that exercising authority? And finally, I offer you a third scenario, that your young child asks you for an iPad. He very much wants this iPad. All his friends, he says, have an iPad. He wants one too. And again, you don't want him to have one. It's not appropriate. It's a spiritual danger in your mind. Are you going to stop him from getting that iPad? Hopefully you will, but is that an exercise in love or is that an exercise in authority? So the truth is that love and authority are totally intertwined. The key to successful balance is knowing what is the essential component in the relationship with the child and in training him and being mechanech him, and what is secondary. A child will follow a parent's discipline when there's love between them, as we saw in the story with Rav Tversky. And ultimately, the flip side is, if a child is not disciplined, he will feel that he is not loved. Classic example, if you observe a child in a shul, one adult comes over to him and hands him a candy. Another adult reprimands him for not looking inside his sitter. Which one is the father? Of course, it's the one who is reprimanding him. Does he have any less love than the candy man? Obviously not. What is the source in Chazal for striving for balance in raising children? So Gemara in Sanhedrin, on Daf Kuf Zayin Amud Beis, also in Sota, on Mem Zayin Amud Beis. Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, the Olam Yehei Smol Docha V'Yamin Mikareves. A person should always push away with his left, referring to his left hand, and draw close with his right. And a few lines later in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, it states this specifically as it relates to children, that this is the method to use with children, that you have to use a combination. You can't just push away. The Gemara specifically cites the example of Elisha and Gehazi, where he pushed Gehazi away with two hands. He actually cursed him for something that he did, and that caused Gehazi to leave Elisha. Nor, as Gemara points out as well, can just be makariv with the Yamin without setting any limits, without setting any parameters. There is another source for the same Chazal. It seems to represent the concept of small docha, yamin mikarevis, in a very different light. There's a medrash in Rus Rabba, Gimel, Tesdayan, and it explains that the interchange between Naomi and her two daughters-in-law, Rus and Orpah, as she was trying to convince them that they should go back to their homeland, go back to their families. The Gemara describes that process as smol docha v'yamin mikarevis. That she was, and whenever you, and the Gemara expands, the Medrash expands on it, to say that this is what's the process with any time a Jew, a non-Jew, wants to join the Jewish people. You push them away. Three times Naomi pushed away Rus and Orpah. And that's the process. We push away. We use the smol and we push away. And we're not very loving to this non-Jew. But then we reach a point when the non-Jew has convinced us of his sincerity. And at that point, we are makarev and we bring the non-Jew close until the point that we have kama v'kama mitzvos and chiyuvim in the Torah to love a ger. Now, if we compare the two, they don't seem to be the same. We analyze them. What happens with a child? A child, you naturally love a child. As soon as a child is born, there's a tremendous amount of love. When we talk about being docheh b'smol, at some point in their development, that you have to utilize that process, but a child, you start out with love. A non-Jew, a potential ger, there's no love at all because you don't know that this person is sincere and you're pushing him away. And he has to prove that he is sincere. And once that's proven, then you're first a Merkara. So they're very different, and yet the Chazal seem to tell us that it's the same process. So how can that be? And I'd like to suggest that although the chronology is clearly different, that with the non-Jew, it's clearly Smol is Doche, and that's the first thing, and that's the only thing until you reach the point of the Kiruv with the Yamin, which then becomes the only thing at that point. And with the child, it's clearly different, because the Smol and the Yamin are a constant interchange and interplay between one and the other. That's very true. They are very different. But the point is that when you have either a potential ger or your child, they have to know at the point at which you need to use your smol, which is being docha, they need to know that you're not their friend. You're not their best buddy. They're not on an equal level with you. A non-Jew trying to join the Jewish people, he's not there yet. He has to be distanced until we're sure that he's worthy. And a child, as much as you love a child, and as much as the child naturally loves a parent, there has to be a distance. There has to be the awareness that we are not on the same level. And if that can be implemented, then we're truly being fulfilling the words of Chazal, that we're using the smol, we're using the yamin, and we are being properly mechanech our child. And it's worthy to note a famous comment of Rav Simcha Wasserman Zatzal, who points out that when you take your left hand and you push a person away from you, while at the same time or in the same process you are being makari with the yamin, the outcome is that you have turned the person around. And with the child, you have now pointed him in the right direction through the combination of the smol docha and the yamin makarevis. We learn from here that the essence of our relationship with our children is clearly love. Authority is the technique. Love is the essence, and authority is the technique. Love is an emotion, and the word emotion comes from the word emote. And emote means to put something into action, to show what we are truly feeling. And we have to let the feelings of love that we have for our children be present, be active, and be felt by the child at all times. Whether we're cuddling and we're enjoying a moment together that's truly pleasurable, or we're disciplining and we're criticizing and we're correcting, the love has to show through in all situations. And balance, of course, is very difficult. Life would be much simpler if we could just follow one approach. But just as a child will accept discipline from a person who he knows truly cares about him, so too a child will love a parent who truly disciplines him and shows the caring through that approach as well. Dr. David Pelkovitz, that great treasure of the Torah world, was revered in all circles. So he tells of a teenager who was fortunately going off the derech. He was into drugs, he was into bad friends, he was out all night, he was disrespectful to his parents. And the three of them, the parents and the teenage boy, came to Dr. Pelkovitz for a therapy session. And at the session, the parents laid down the law for the child. They read him a new set of rules that were now going to affect. They had a strict curfew. He had chores to do in the house. He had to fulfill academic responsibilities. And there were clearly spelled out consequences for his misbehavior. The child's reaction was to rant and rave. He went into a full-blown tantrum. And things were going downhill. Dr. Pelkovitz intervened. He asked the parents to leave, step out of the room. And he sat with the boy and waited a few minutes till he'd calmed down. Once the boy had calmed down, he looked at Dr. Pelkovitz. He let out a sigh and he said, "It's about time." The child himself knew very well that the parents were on the wrong track. He was upset that they were not showing their love to him, not taking care of him, but just allowing him to wander and to destroy himself. And this teenager understood that better than the parents had before Dr. Pelkovitz intervened. I have to make clear that all this discussion about exerting authority when it's called for is never referring to lashing out in anger or with impatience. Okay, that is clearly destructive and counterproductive. But since we all have our moments, what should we do? So the good news is that children are very resilient. We can make a lot of mistakes and they will still go on the right path. Our relationship can still be intact. But nevertheless, every parent should work on bringing to their consciousness at all times and keeping in mind when they react that my reactions need to be based upon what is best for my child, rather than I had a rough day, I have no patience, this kid is driving me crazy, and I got to get him to stop. That may help you for the moment, but that is not chinuch, that is not love, and that is certainly not helpful to your child. Some of us need work on being more assertive, more authoritative, and with consistent follow-through, of course. That's all part of being authoritative. Our threats are very hollow and weak if we don't follow through. What we really need to work on is how to show love in a manner that is truthful and sincere, and that will greatly strengthen your bond with your child. Reuven Feinstein, Shlita, once identified three areas of showing love that he described his father, the great Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zatzal, showed on a regular basis to him. Three areas of love. One was caring for his physical needs without being asked. And he described how on cold winter mornings, Rav Moshe Feinstein, the great Rav Moshe, would take Rav Reuven's clothes, place them on the radiator, so that when Reuven had to get up on a cold winter morning, his clothes would be warm. It would be more comfortable. It would be less unpleasant for him to get up. That was one. Another manifestation of his love was, if it's important to you, it's important to me. Parent needs to feel that. If it's important for my child, it's important to me. And Reuven tells a story that they were in the bungalow and he was learning with his father, and this was a daily occurrence. And at some point in the afternoon, the manager of the bungalow colony would go into town with his pickup truck, but he would fill it with hay and give the children a hayride. And it was the highlight of the day. And Reuven very much wanted to go on it. And as soon as they heard the truck, Rav Moshe would stop their learning session and say, okay, we're taking a break, you're going on the hayride. Rav Reuven knew from that how much his father loved him. And finally, that the unvarying love, that it doesn't change in circumstances, it doesn't change because of different situations. Rav Moshe hosted many great Rabbanim, dignitaries. No matter who was at the house, who came to the table, who was the guest, who was the distinguished visitor, Rav Reuven always had his seat next to his father. That never changed. He never lost it. And he was never made to feel like he was second in importance to something else that his father was doing. I'd now like to address some questions that we have. First question, can you achieve the balance between authority and loving by having one parent being the authority and the other person being the source of love? And the answer to that is, that's not how you achieve balance. Because the parent who is all loving will have that loving relationship with the child. But if they have no authority, no assertiveness, then the child will walk all over them and will ultimately lose respect and perhaps even dissipate the love because the parent doesn't really care about them because they can't control them and they can't set limits for them. And the parent who is mainly the authority figure will sacrifice the relationship because it's not balanced. So it needs a balance with each parent. And the parents obviously complement each other. They can have different temperaments themselves, obviously. But they do need to every parent needs to achieve that balance in their own right. Another question, how can you balance when what works for one child doesn't work for the other? For example, if you have a child with a different temperament, you have one very intense child amongst a group of laid-back children, or usually the opposite, a lot of intense children, and one is just very chilled. So how do you achieve that sense of balance when what you're doing does work for most of them, but there's one child for whom it does not work? And this is hard. Part of balance is keeping your eyes wide open, constantly discussing with each other, between the parents, and possibly conferring with someone outside to give you insight after you analyze and try to figure out what is it that each child needs. Usually what works for one does not work for many. If you're lucky enough to have it work for many, and still there's one for whom it doesn't work, you have to work harder, and you may even need to consult with a rav or with a therapist to guide you in that situation. Okay, another question: what if you feel you are balancing, but it's not working? You're not achieving what you would like to with your children. And I would say that if you're truly achieving balance, it's working. It's got to work. And you have to check and see. Perhaps you're entering the situation with your own autobiography. Maybe your parents were extremely strict, and you don't want that for your children. So you may be bending over in the other direction without even realizing it. Or, equally common, your parents were very strict, and that's just your default, and you're also being very strict without even realizing that what might have worked for you is not working for your child. Parents have to be very careful about that, that they have to know clearly what works for their child, not, I want this for my child because I never had it, or I had it, or it was painful to me, or I really loved it. It doesn't necessarily translate to the next generation or to every child in your family. You may need to get an objective opinion. You may need to get outside support for that as well. Don't have to go it alone. There are resources that you can always tap into to help with the challenges of parenting. I would like to conclude with one final story, which I think really illustrates what a good and true balance can be and should be within the parent-child relationship. And we turn again to the Twersky family, another illustrious Milwaukee child, Rabbi Dr. Avraham Twersky. He tells the following story. He was a young child, and they had a mishulach in the house for Shabbos. And the mishulach challenged him to a game of chess. Being a bright boy, he accepted the challenge. They played their chess game, and little Avraham's father happened to walk by during the chess game, didn't say anything. Afterwards, he pulled Avraham aside, and he let him know that despite the possibly kulas that exist, he was not happy with his own son playing chess on Shabbos. And he told him, it's pasnished for you to be playing chess on Shabbos. So first of all, we should take note of the fact that he didn't say, it's wrong, you did something wrong. He certainly didn't say, you're a bad boy. He said, it's pasnished. That means you're better than that. You are a very special child. You're a very special young man. For you, it's not appropriate. Building him up while he's criticizing. But then, Rabbi Twersky Sr. walked to the door. As he was leaving, he turned around, and with a twinkle in his eye, he turned to Avraham and he said, did you win? That is balance. That is love, and that is authority. I want to thank you all for listening, and Hashem should give you much nachas for your family and with your children.